Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 223.
Wow.
Yeah. Who's our guest on this one?
Kirk.
Yeah.
Kirk Shintani.
Yeah. Head of 3D over at Elastic, A52, all that big group of stuff
going on. This is the second time for Kirk, right?
It is. The first time we did was back in 2015. It was episode 32.
Wow.
And in fact, you should listen to that one if you want to get more of his backstory and a little bit about that story. But this one, we were mainly focusing on Game of Thrones and on the title sequence. And this is a story we wanted to talk about for a long time, right, Lon?
Oh, I love the title sequence.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And season 8 They went all out.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
And we're still in the middle of it, right? So
yeah,
we'll see what happens from here on out for the next few episodes.
Absolutely. I think the thing that's interesting is that this journey for them started 9.5 years ago, and it was the first time they ever used V-Ray over there. It was like, we're going to try something new. So they tried something new with this title sequence, and they tried something new with the render, and they've been on that journey ever since, you know, sort of thinking about how V-Ray has changed what they're doing, as well as how this title sequence changed. And for this season 8 was the first time that just basically threw everything away and started from scratch.
That's like an artist's dream, right?
Yeah.
To be able to go, okay, let's reset the Etch-A-Sketch.
Right.
And go and do all the things that we've been wanting to do for, you know, the last 7 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really exciting to see that. And you know, it's interesting. Not everyone knows that the title sequence changes with every episode. So it's a new intro for every episode, and it's really kind of cool to see what they do there. Anyway, I can't wait. There's what, three or four more episodes left?
Yeah, I mean, so there's, at the moment we're recording this, there'll be three more episodes left, but I think this comes out on Monday. So
yes. So
there'll be two episodes left after that.
Right. So we haven't seen episode 4. I did finally watch episode 3.
No spoilers.
And in fact, big thing is this podcast doesn't have any spoilers in it whatsoever.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. No spoilers.
So that's a good thing. All right. We've got a couple of announcements. I think we are going to be heading out to Sophia.
Sunny Sophia. Yeah.
Not long from now, in about a week or week and a week plus.
For complete and utter total chaos.
Yeah. And you and I will be there. We will be moderating many of the talks, so that will be exciting. I think there's maybe a couple of masterclass tickets left. So if you guys are interested in going to Total Chaos, make sure to go to our page, chaosgroup.com/total-chaos. And there's several other events that are going to happening in June. So go to our events page. Just go to chaosgroup.com and check out the events page there. FMX is happening right now as we record this. I think it's probably wrapping up at this point. And then there's a couple. What other ones we have? We have CG Talk over in Israel, in Tel Aviv, I think. So that's going to be exciting. And several other events going on as well. So just go to our events page to check that out. And only other thing I'd say, if you guys are enjoying this podcast, it's a pretty mature podcast at this point, but make sure and, you know, go to our Facebook page, which is CG Garage Podcast, and go to Apple's iTunes section to give us a rating and a review. We'd always appreciate that. And that's about it. So with that being said, enjoy this great podcast with Kirk Shintani from Elastic.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has for now.
We're good, dude.
Sweet. It's been a while.
It has. I think the last time we did this like you and I recorded was, like 2+ years ago?
I think it's been longer because it was with Chris Janey. It was me and Chris Janey. Yeah. That seems like it's been, I want to say it was closer to 4 years ago, maybe 5.
Can't be 4 years ago because the podcast is only about 4 years old, but it was in the youth of the podcast. That's yeah. True.
I think it, yeah, maybe it was 3, but definitely more than 2 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, lots happened since then, dude.
And you have a fancy room now.
I have a fancy room. I have this fancy table. Yeah. I'm excited about it happening. So that's exciting. I'm going to make sure my phone is on silent. I've got so many things going on right now.
I know.
It's awesome. Like between Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame, I'm like I'm actually trying to avoid social media right now. It's kind of insane.
It's tough, right?
Because I haven't seen episode 3 yet.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I have to be careful. I'll try and be careful. It's pretty epic.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It is epic, yeah. And it is fun, and I'm excited about it. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so let's talk about this journey that you've gone through in terms of describing, you know, because you and I have talked about this for a long, long time, about mm-hmm. nine years, almost 10.
It's, yeah, 9.5. Yeah.
Right.
For me.
That you've thought about this particular part of Game of Thrones and the intro title, because it's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, I mean, it started in 2010. So, yeah, it's been 9.5. It's been 9.5 years since right. the very beginning. And, you know, a lot has changed since then for us. And, you know, I think along the way, we've always kind of mulled over it. It's always kind of been there, like in the right. back of our heads, you know, every year. We always thought about it. So for us, it was one of those things where this season in particular was kind of a perfect chance to get in there and kind of do some of the things that we've always wanted to do that we just either haven't had time to do or it didn't quite fit, you know, the need, you know, so.
But that intro title is iconic.
I don't know how to respond to that.
But I mean, it is, right? Because everyone thinks about it in an interesting way. And what was interesting is that I spoke to someone not too long ago and said, do you realize that the intro title is different for every episode based on what's happening?
Yeah.
And that is actually in itself an interesting concept, right?
I do think that when we started it, that was something that we leaned into. So we were – in the initial kind of framing of the season one main title, we did have an idea of how to make this plausible moving forward. Because, like, you know, with the amount of CG that we had to do, we had to be careful about how we structured it so that, you know, moving forward from season one to season two, we can actually update it without having to redo the whole thing.
Right. You
know? So it's always kind of been there and we were always kind of planning for it. So I think after season one ended and they, you know, came to us for season two, we were prepared for kind of the next steps of the progression of this thing.
Right.
I don't think anybody really knows how popular or, you know, iconic something's going to be when they're working on it. You know,
I get it. Yeah.
And for us, it was definitely something we knew the show was going to be pretty big because the fan base was already pretty large.
Right. When you started, right?
When we started, yeah. But I, you know, you never know, you know, and for us, we just wanted to make the title as cool as we could make it. And,
sure.
You know, hopefully we'll be able to get to season two, season three, season four, you know.
What I think is fabulous about that idea of this map is that it is so important to the story. And if you think about the way that the map is laid out, is like, okay, here's the story, mm-hmm. and here's all the different parts that are going on in this story. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, through this episode that you haven't seen yet, I'm going to tell you about all the different places they are so that when you watch the story, you are grounded into the locations. Mm-hmm. And every episode gives you a grounding without spoiling anything.
That's the tricky part, right?
That is the tricky part, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's fabulous the way you did it. There's so many things, and I'm going to go through all of that idea because we're now, you know, in the ninth season, the final season, right?
Eighth season.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, mm-hmm. The ninth year, but
yeah.
eighth season of that, and talking about that, and it's like, okay, so here's where's everything is going, mm-hmm. and that's so important. To understand the grounding of this, which is geographically interesting in its own right, but what's very important about it is like finding the right locations and taking people through that journey, and the fact that every episode has a different journey, and that you go through that process and figuring out. The travel process through every journey is actually an editorial problem.
Oh, for sure. Like that's, I think that was the, for me, that was the most interesting part of being a part of season one. The most interesting thing for me was to see how someone like Angus Wall, who creative directed the main title, and then season one, Rob Fang art directed it. But Angus is an editor.
Right.
So from
that's what I was getting at.
Yeah. So from our standpoint, it was brilliant the way, you know, it became an editorial exercise to update every season. And, you know, that's what
every
made it.
Every episode.
Well, it was, I think we're at, I want to say 30, so like 30 something versions at this point.
Right.
So it's like four or five per season. But you know, he definitely approached it from an editorial viewpoint and said, this is how we can actually make that happen, how we can actually update it as often as we need to without redoing everything.
Right.
And still give it substance and make it feel like it's telling a story, right. You know. And I think that's what makes this main title unique in that it isn't just a main title that sets tone.
Right.
You know, it isn't just a visual main title. It's actually, it actually has a purpose beyond, you know, style. I think there's a certain informational aspect to it that's important, right? Like where you are and where you're going. But the fact that it does change every episode or every, you know, so many episodes, it actually forces the viewer to realize that, you know, these are things that are actually important to the story, and it becomes almost a narrative, kind of a quick Cliff Notes version of, hey, this is what you're in for this episode.
Right.
You know, so without even seeing the episode, if you just watch the main title and you follow where the camera takes you for that main title, you have a good understanding of not only where you're going, but what characters you're going to see. Because, you know, based on what the previous episodes were, you kind of knew where these characters left off.
Right.
So when you see a new location that you haven't been introduced to before, there's this little bit of excitement knowing that you're going to be able to go somewhere and there's a new event that's coming up.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, Angus, the initial idea of how this was structured was, for me, was it made it so easy to kind of break it down and actually do it, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah, it was pretty interesting to see how between Angus and Rob and all the ideas that they came up with the first go around.
Right.
I mean, our reference folders were just stuffed with all sorts of just cool stuff that we drew inspiration from. So, you know, that combined with Angus's background as an editor, I think it just made the whole process really enjoyable and fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think there's something really beautiful about the narrative that you tell in that short period, mm-hmm. that's like getting people ready for what they're about to watch.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an amazing thing. Nonetheless, let's go through a lot of the other interesting things that happened through that process. Right.
Okay.
So the one thing I want to talk about is the lack of horizon.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Some people, it took people a while to realize that it was actually in an inverted sphere and it wasn't a flat plane.
Right.
Because, you know, the way we structured our moves.
Explain that more specifically for people who are listening, right?
Well, the idea is one of the things that we definitely didn't want to do was to just have a table with a map and fly over this map with a virtual camera and, you know, always be pointing down.
Right.
So you'd be pointing down at the map and you'd just basically be moving across the map from location to location. That wasn't right. something that I think Angus or Rob or anybody really wanted to kind of do because it's been done a million times before. And the thing that we were trying to figure out is how do we get the idea of a map and not have it presented on a table in a room in somewhere.
Right.
Like we wanted to self-contain it so that it felt like it was in its own space, its own world, so that you couldn't tell where it was.
Right.
And, you know, the initial thought was, well, if we put it in a bowl, like a half bowl, we can.
But inside the bowl.
Inside the bowl. So you're right. looking into a bowl and the map is on the interior of that. You know, then we can move from location to location and not see the horizon line or the edge of the table. And then it got taken further than that to the point where, well, if you want to look up, you can't. So let's just close that thing off and put everything on the inside.
Right.
And so it actually worked out in a lot of different ways. So the idea of no horizon line, we can contain the environment we're flying around in.
Right.
But also it allowed us to do some of the crazier moves that you see, you know, in the earlier seasons where, you know, we go up to the astrolabe and we spin around and we come down in some weird, like there's a move to Pentos that comes in at, you know, a 90 degree angle as opposed to flat.
Right.
And it allowed us to kind of explore those kind of moves because we didn't have to worry about where it was situated. It was all self-contained.
Right.
So that actually helped define, I think, some of the language of the cameras as well. And all of that kind of built on itself, you know.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. And what's interesting is that through that process that you guys have developed, that's a language that has now become iconic.
Yeah, I think the cameras themselves and the way the cameras fly around and even that.
It is so unique in a lot of ways that people now like make a parody of it and do everything else. Like you actually win in that area because like people are looking like, oh, I want to do a Game of Thrones title sequence because no one else has ever done anything like this. Mm. And you now have become something that's so important.
I would like to hope that it's inspirational in a way. Like
it is.
Being able to think of things a little differently and kind of change perspective, right?
Like, yeah.
Not only with the visuals of the show, but, you know, the structure of how those visuals were created and the substance behind all of that stuff.
Like, right.
To us, that was probably some of the more important things that we define that language early on and we stick to it. And, you know, we make sure that we're always true to the original concept and we don't veer away from that at all over 9 years.
No.
Yeah.
You don't. But interestingly, let's go to the Oreo commercial.
Ah, yes.
That was which fun. You also did.
Yeah. You know, we were approached to do an Oreo commercial that was kind of a tribute to the main title. So, you know, for us, it was a no-brainer. We're like, yeah, sure, we'll do it because we did the main title. So for us, it was an extension of what we've already been doing.
Right.
But one of the things that, you know, I myself specifically wanted to avoid is spoofing ourselves, right? Like,
right.
There's a difference between paying tribute to something and still having some sort of foundation to the thing that you're doing and just sure. kind of taking the existing main title and stuffing some things in there, you know?
Right.
So, you know, for us, it was just finding a way to make that Oreo thing look unique and have it have its own visual style, but still pay respect to the original main title in a way that is more about the camera moves and how some of the buildings were built and the structures and things like that. And it was less about kind of stuffing Oreos into our main title, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's amazing that you were able to do that because, you know, I think, well, first of all, I think you succeeded
in
exactly what you're trying to do,
yeah.
Which is a good thing. But also, like, the idea of that is a style. Now, what you guys have done at this point is a style.
Yeah.
And people will reference that for years to come.
I mean, it's been going on for a while. Like, I've seen people send me kind of these tribute videos and kind of...
Did you see the anime one that was on College Humor that was all like live action?
I saw the Funny or Die one. That one,
yeah,
was
Funny or Die. That's the one.
Yeah, that one was pretty hilarious.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, it was about the spirit of it, and the spirit of it was bang on. You know,
yeah.
And then the Simpsons one for us was kind of, I mean, how often you get spoofed on the Simpsons? You know,
I know.
It's like it. It was a little mind-boggling.
That is a win right there, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were all thrilled when we saw it. You know, and then there's been a handful of other companies that have kind of done really elegant kind of takes on our main title too.
Right.
So, you know, for us, it's fun to see this stuff and, you know, it inspires people to try different things. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's a little surreal, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here you are on the last season, but I want to go back to season one, okay. Right?
Uh-huh.
When you guys were first figuring this out, mm-hmm. like, how the hell are we going to do this, uh-huh. right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're presented with this grandiose idea that's never been done and trying to figure it out. And you have to make it look, you know, it has to be done CG because you can't you can't practically make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide, okay, we're going to do it this way and we're going to render it in CG.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I have been good friends and we talk on, you know, we text each other and we have all kinds of crazy ideas.
Yeah.
But what made you decide, like, okay, here's how I'm going to do it. And, mm-hmm. and obviously you mentioned, you know, you talked to me personally and said, this is the first time I decided to go with V-Ray and it was a gamble.
Right? Yeah.
So tell me about that story about like how that need to happen.
I think our process for season one, once we,
and this was 9 years ago.
Yeah. Right? This was over 9 years ago. So, you know, I think all the artists, back then, like, you know, I think there were four people that carried over that I kept on through all of those
right.
seasons. So, you know, for those artists that remember season one, you know, I think the biggest challenge for us was, you know, struggling with figuring out how to build these things. Because, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces and small little bits and kind of detail elements to a lot of these things.
Sure.
And, you know, it isn't as straightforward as, you know, we're not designing a character and then rigging the character and animating the character and then rendering the character, where, you know, I can critique modeling, you know, as a separate thing. I think the thing that kind of got everybody a little tripped up along the way was that modeling and animation were basically the same thing because right. all these pieces had to be interconnected and moved together. So once we kind of figured out that process and, you know, the best way to kind of figure out how to structurally build these things to work, we started doing render tests with these things. And
okay.
for us, at the time, we were using a different renderer,
mm-hmm.
and we started testing with that renderer. And things were either not rendering or rendering extremely slowly. So we started looking around for other solutions because we had to finish this job. So, you know, I think we came across V-Ray at the time, and I think it was 1.5 advanced.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, dude. I was digging around to try and see what version we were using.
That's a long time ago, dude.
Yeah. And, you know, we loaded up a demo,
mm-hmm.
and Ian Rufus, who has been working on it with me every single season.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a bunch of render tests on it, and he couldn't stop talking about how fast it was and how good it looked, you
okay.
know? And so for us, we were like, okay, let's just, we have to render it. Like our old render is not cutting it. This one seems, it looks better and it renders faster and mm-hmm. we have way more control. So let's just jump in there and do it.
How much time did you have at that time? Because at that point, you know, when you switch rendering engines, I know the pain of that process.
Yeah.
In the middle of production.
We had just started doing look dev on some of the models. So that must have been, I want to say it was, I think we still had 3 months.
Okay. Not much.
No, I think it was like 3 months left.
Right.
But the tricky part was, you know, we were learning this, we were learning V-Ray on the fly at the same time. So, you know, it's funny, we look back and we're like, man, what were we doing? Because, you know, you look at your old setups and stuff and you're like, all these things are set wrong. Like we weren't using this right, you know, but we were basically just going at it.
Yeah. At the seat of your pants, right?
Yeah. Just to get stuff out, you know? And, the one thing I will say is that for us, it wasn't as difficult a transition as I thought it would be.
Okay.
Only because there were so many features for us that we wanted that our old render didn't have.
Right.
That were basically baked into the version of V-Ray that we used.
Sure.
It was just like, turn the stuff on and let's go, you know?
Right.
So it made it a lot easier than maybe it should have been.
Sure.
I think the hard part was the user element of it and figuring out how to optimize and, you know, take advantage of a lot of that speed that's there, you know? So between season one and season two, I think our render times went down. They were like 10% of what season one's render times are.
Yeah, because you had learned so much, right?
Yeah.
Because the first season you had to learn on the fly.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a lot of mistakes you probably made.
Yeah, there were, yeah, it's funny. Like in talking to Ian now, you know, we're like, man, like if we would have just known what we know now and go back into season one, we could have rendered it so much faster. You know?
Right.
But it's one of those things where, you know, even though we were using it completely wrong at the time, you know, it still was able to give us the renders we needed, you know?
Right.
And it was flexible enough and understanding enough as a package to know that, you know, I still need to render this for these guys. So I'm going to chug along and get this render out and, you know, I'm not going to fail on them.
Right.
You know, and that was the big thing. Like, you know, I think in our initial tests, there were a couple cases where the old render just didn't render. It just didn't work, or it just crawled and it, you know, it scared us. So, you know, that's what prompted us to kind of start looking around.
But you guys switched at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And there was something that was, you know, you guys were committed. You did it. Season two happened and you're like, oh shit, our render times went way down because now we know what we're supposed to actually do.
Yeah, exactly.
And then now, you know, like, you know, eight seasons later, now you're like, you're following us along the path of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that happened during that process is that you guys actually opened up the communication to us and work with us along the way so that we could provide you, you know, feedback or help along the way. So what was that journey like? Just the idea of working with Chaos Group to say, like, all right, this is what I need to get to the next season or whatever that was.
You know, I think we went all in. So after season one, that was the only renderer for 90% of the work that we did. That was the only renderer we used. There were a couple cases where we had to go back to the old one just for whatever reasons. But
sure,
you know, and then by season two, that was it. That V-Ray was the only thing we were using. So, you know, for us, it was kind of amazing to jump on a new package and, you know, we muddled through season one because we were trying to figure it out. And then somewhere along the line, I think it was season two. It might have been. Yeah, I think it was around season two where we started emailing with you guys at Chaos Group.
Right.
And the great thing was we actually got emails back. So, you know, that amount of response to us and the amount of kind of support that we got.
Right.
You know, it was huge because we're not a huge, at the time we were kind of small, like we weren't that big, you know, there's a handful of CG guys and we were kind of, you know, using off the shelf and, you know, making sure that we were just pushing as hard as we could. So any support we could get was really appreciated. And you guys went way above and beyond because, you know, between season one, where we first started using V-Ray, and season eight now, mm-hmm. I mean, there's, I can't even count how many times that we've reached out for, you know, something even unrelated to GOT, but project-based kind of questions and things that we kind of wanted to try or needed help implementing. And we've always gotten a response back. And you guys have been always more than willing to reach out and connect us with the right people or make sure that, you know, we had the information we needed. I mean, I can think of a handful of cases where, you know, we were stuck with, like, for instance, Massive. We use Massive a lot in the studio.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, there's been cases where things weren't quite working for us, and you guys said, okay, well, what do you need? And, you know, that night we get a custom build in our download section. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, that kind of customer service and help and knowing that you have somebody on your side who understands the production process,
yeah,
and realizes that you can have a problem at 2 a.m., you know, and they'll always be there to answer it. Right. I think that was a huge kind of safety net for us, making that transition and sticking with it.
You know? Do you think that there are people that don't realize that? I mean, and like you said, you know, going back to season one, we respond, right? We'll mm-hmm. respond either way. But people don't realize, like, oh, you have a problem. Just send an email
mm-hmm.
and you'll be surprised that you will get a response.
You know, it's funny because it's almost like people have been conditioned to sit there and basically bang their heads against their keyboard and try and figure it out on their own. Like, it feels to me like people are used to not getting emails, that the fact that you guys actually email back and give support is
right.
is the exception, which to me is it's a little odd.
But is it the exception?
I can only think of you guys as the ones that kind of have given us the support that we needed when we needed it, you know? Like,
sure.
The Massive thing is a good example where, you know, we were trying to get Massive working with V-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some little things that needed to be kind of tidied up, I think, in the back and forth between the two packages.
Mm-hmm.
And Vlado just said, all right, here, use this and you'll be set. And that was literally, it was probably a 5-email chain total.
Okay.
And at the end of that chain, we had what we needed to actually implement it across our facility. You know, it's not just a simple, like, I don't know how this renders.
Right.
Like, this doesn't work or it doesn't render right or whatever it is.
Sure.
It was literally, it doesn't work in our pipeline. How do we get this to work? And it right. was like, here's all you need to get it to work.
Well, that honestly, that's Vlado. Vlado is amazing and Vlado is important. And yeah. the fact is that he responds and respects and gets involved in that stuff.
Mm.
And he's not going to prioritize emails based on, you know, this is ILM and they're working on the next Marvel film. He's going to prioritize it on, like, that. This is a problem I can solve.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get to that. And these guys reached out to me, and therefore I'm going to respond. So even, you know, I don't want to call you guys a small shop. But
we're not big, yeah.
But sure. at that point, you guys were like, we have a problem, and we're just going to reach out to Chaos Group, and Vlado's going to respond. And that happens.
Yeah.
And that's kind of actually kind of special about him. That's actually one of the biggest reasons that I'm in Chaos Group, because mm-hmm. he is so responsive towards people and not based on ego of any kind. Mm. He's just like, I love what I do and I'm going to be part of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I asked him, you know, why do you do this?
Like, not sleep, right?
He doesn't sleep.
No.
I don't know if he sleeps at all. Yeah. But why do you do this? And he said, honestly, I do it because you never know when it's exciting. Mm. And when he sees Game of Thrones main titles, he gets, he's like, that's a reward. You know, he gets to see, he's like, wow, I got to help make that happen. Yeah. And to him, he's not an artist, right? Mm. So to him, he gets to see the artistry taking ownership of the technology that he put behind it. Mm-hmm. So it's really a nice thing in a lot of ways. But I love the Game of Thrones intro. Obviously, it's been amazing, and it's a big journey. This last season, and I've only seen two episodes.
Okay, I'll be careful.
To be really careful. I have not seen episode three, which came out as of this recording, came out yesterday, because I was too busy with the Avengers stuff going on with my kids.
You were busy with the other Stark.
Yeah, the other Stark. Yeah. Yes, the other Stark, exactly. Yeah. But I'm going to watch that. So, but tell me, like, this was a big change for you guys. Like, you guys decided last season, we're going to change everything. So explain a little bit about this last season.
Well, it started in June of 2017. So,
oh, so like 2 years ago.
Yeah. So even before season seven finished.
Right.
Dan and David and Greg, they came to our shop and let us know that they're going to want to redo it and change a bunch of stuff in the main title. And that's, they kind of hinted at a bunch of things, but they didn't really give us much beyond that. And then we met again a year later to go over kind of specifics and what they were talking about. So the whole time we were just, our brains were going in overdrive trying to figure out what we can do and how we can change things. And, you know, there were a ton of ideas that didn't quite make it in season one. So we had this laundry list of things that have been percolate, that's kind of been percolating and right, just sitting there.
Because you're in it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there were a lot of things that we felt like we wanted to update or, you know, kind of include that we didn't get a chance to before. So, you know, when they came to us, we were really excited about it. And then they started talking about doing interiors and flying into locations, you know, then we kind of went nuts and we were like, oh, okay, then we'll basically have to redo everything because, you know, the idea of the season one main titles, and I think Angus put it the best, you know, it was a representation. It was very kind of abstract the way we presented some of these locations.
Right.
And it wasn't really based on a specific scale necessarily. Like it was based on a scale, but there was kind of an interpretation of how big these things are. And, you know, for us going into season eight, knowing we had to go from outside to inside, we had to set that scale at something. It had to be more concrete and more kind of tangible.
Okay.
So we basically ended up throwing everything away, starting from scratch. And it felt, for the guys that worked on season one, it felt exactly like season one, where we went back to reference and we went back to concept and we basically redid all of the locations that you see from scratch. So even the old concept art that we did before didn't really apply just because of the new requirements of flying in to these locations.
Right.
And the one thing that we really wanted to push this time around, and it's something that, you know, I think the 9.5 years have given us kind of this, you know, kind of better understanding of where we can push things. We've been staring at this main title for so long, you know, it's like, oh, we should push that if we get the chance. We should push that if we get the chance. So, right. You know, it was just detail, just adding tons of detail wherever we could, you know, and making sure that texturally things felt a little more tangible, more grounded. Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that probably made the biggest difference was the amount of sculpting that we did across the board. You know, so there was, everything was modeled and then everything got pumped through ZBrush and then got spit back out. So there was that extra layer of kind of.
But there, okay, so all of the entire title sequence always looks like a miniature mm-hmm. in some ways, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you guys paid close attention to making it feel miniature, mm-hmm. even in this new season, where yeah. suddenly like you're going into an impossible space that you should not do, like based on it feeling like a miniature, mm-hmm. where the depth of field still makes it feel like a miniature, right?
Well, I think that we actually went backwards. We started with the smallest thing that we wanted to detail out.
Okay. Because explain that. Yeah.
Well, you know, the idea of building a one shot that goes from this wide exterior mm-hmm. through stuff into something, down something else and through a hallway, you know,
right.
that idea of keeping that a one shot, it forced us to think about where our smallest detail is going to, what our smallest detail is going to be.
Right.
So, you know, the throne room, for instance, we went backwards. We started with the size of the throne.
Okay.
So how big can we make this throne and still make it feel detailed enough, but not have it be so small that it's kind of like a toothpick, you know, like,
right.
you know,
or feels like a toy.
Yeah. And right. it has to feel like
a little grandiose in some ways.
It needs to feel like it was actually doable. Like this, the level of detail,
it
had to feel doable. So we started with that and backed out of that. And that scale, the smallest detail scale dictated how big these buildings were going to be. And then from that, we kind of built our texture scale around kind of that unit once we figured it out.
Right.
So it was a little more specific. And, you know, it forced us to kind of think a little bit more carefully about the choices we made along the way to make sure that we didn't kind of push things a little too far or, you know, put too much detail in to certain areas that shouldn't have that much detail, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, like you can only cut the throne. You can only make the throne so small before it feels like a little lump.
That's actually an interesting aesthetic problem, right?
Yeah, it's not something that I've ever encountered before, this specific right. case. So
you want the throne to feel like it's part of a miniature.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if you were to build a miniature that's a foot tall for the entire Red Keep, how small would the throne actually end up being? If
right.
it was in a one room of that giant, you know, it would, the right. room would be the size of a business card and
right.
your throne would be the size of, you know, a P.
Right.
You know, and how doable is that, you know?
Very challenging.
Yeah. So,
but then when you pull out, it mm-hmm. still has to feel like a miniature, right?
Yeah. And I think we pushed the scale of some of the exteriors a little bit bigger this time around.
Yes.
To kind of give us the leeway and the room that we needed to get
inside.
Now,
how much of that did you play with the depth of field, right? Because obviously one of the biggest ways to sell someone on the idea of miniature mm-hmm. is how much depth of field you have, because there's only so much depth of field you can get from a miniature, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually did a ton of tests to see what felt natural and what felt pushed.
Okay.
And most of the shots, all the DOF was baked in.
Okay.
And we wanted to keep it as kind of true as possible and not cheap.
Do you guys use physical cameras?
Yeah, so we use physical camera. And, you know, we were able to kind of exaggerate the DOF to the point where it felt like it was a little weird. And, you know, if you compare the DOF to season 8 to season 1, we mm-hmm. actually have way less.
Way less?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense because you're trying to show more.
Well, you know, just the sense of scale too, you know, with the scale change and things like
I
think we were trying to be as close to accurate as possible. We did push it in certain cases where it felt like, you know, the frame needed a little more focusing and, you know, the DOF helped kind of draw the eye and things like that. But for the most part, we were pretty careful about how we applied it.
Right.
I think you can go too far and, you know, push it really hard and, you know, it'll look kind of cool in a still, but once it starts moving, I think it starts to get a little odd.
But you also, you know, the thing about depth of field, right, is that you focus on just a part of the image,
mm-hmm.
but you're actually trying to tell a wide image story.
Yeah.
You're trying to tell a story of the entire thing. So I'm just using an example, right?
Sure.
So as you go into Winterfell, right, in season 8, you go down and then you go into the keep. Mm-hmm. That is a closed small space.
Yeah.
And you better tell that story and make it feel like you're now in a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing all this stuff, because if you make it super small, you won't see anything that's going on, right? I mean, it's like that's a hard camera problem. That's a, you know, that's a really hard camera problem.
And I think for us, that was, you know, in our initial tests, those are the things that we found out really early on, is that, you know, what worked for the wides that made them feel more pushed and more like season 1 through 7,
mm-hmm.
didn't work for the interiors, because like you're saying, you know, your whole sense of scope in the frame changes. So,
right.
We did the same thing that we did with the scale for the modeling, is that we worked backwards. We worked from a DOF that worked for the interior that right. we were heading into, and then backed out of that, to find a DOF that kind of bridged the gap.
Right.
You know,
So just on a practical level, uh-huh, right? If I'm an animator and I'm like figuring out this camera, whatever I'm doing,
yeah.
Do you animate the f-stop as you're going down? Like, how do you solve this problem?
Yeah, we definitely we cheated it along the way to kind of
that's not get cheating. Us, that's
well, the, but you know, it's one of those things where the camera move itself is impossible, right? All of these moves are just, they're not physically possible, but they have the right sensibility behind the main title that we've done before. Like it reflects the original main titles. So as we were going along, we were finding ourselves animating f-stop, animating focus distance, animating like pretty much anything we could to give us the visual that we wanted. And the cool thing was,
but that's awesome.
Well, the cool thing was we could do it. Like yes. You know, we could cheat what we needed to cheat and push what we needed to push,
right.
and kind of draw focus where we needed it to be drawn to. And it was kind of natural to kind of go down that route, you know, and it didn't feel like we were ever stuck, you know.
Right.
And that was kind of the nice thing about it, is that, you know, it was super flexible and super quick to kind of test all these things.
Have you ever shot practical miniatures before?
We did a couple spots. Yeah.
You know how painful that is?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and we tried to take some of the things that, you know, we've learned along the way and apply them to this thing. But
right.
The fact that it was all CG, you know, it gave us so much flexibility. And we weren't tied into, you know, anything really. Like everything was on the table as far as what can be tweaked and what can be yeah. altered, you know. And the great thing was it was all about what we saw. Like the final image is what dictated what we did to get there, because yeah. we wanted it to look a certain way. And that was, I mean, it was pretty, it was fun. It was a fun kind of journey to tweak and
yeah. You know. I think it's an amazing journey, because I remember specifically, like, I've done several miniature shoots myself, and I was like, oh, this is painful. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because it's beautiful when you see it and it works, but all the problems happen along the way. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I actually even remember at one point we were doing some commercial, I forgot what it was, where the only way they were going to be able to get the camera down to the level that they needed was to use one of those periscopes.
Yep.
Right. So it's a little periscope situation. Mm-hmm. And then when we looked at the footage, it was something was really messed up about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that RGB each had a different focal point.
Oh, so you had channel shift in the DOF?
Yes.
Oh.
And you know how hard that is to solve?
Yeah.
And then you have to put CG in the middle of that, because there's a rainbow effect yeah. of focus problem, right?
Yeah. Every time something gets blurry, it just
you got to make it breaking. Blurry for different channels. And like, oh my God, it's a yeah. big pain in the ass, because it's really hard to get a camera that small.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you do it in CG, you can make it work and mm-hmm. make it sell. And so.
Well, and you can push it as hard as you want. You don't have to worry right. about optics or like making sure the lenses are good and they're not breaking. They're not.
You
want to
make a super small camera in CG? You can make a super small camera in CG.
Exactly.
Right? And you're basically going from the world of Westeros down to the keep in Winterfell, right? And so that's kind of an awesome journey to take you down there.
Yeah, it was fun. It was for me. It was a great kind of bookend to the whole thing, because we got a chance to put a lot of the things in that we wanted to. And, you know, Dan, David, and Greg, they're super supportive and really gung-ho. And, you know, they put a lot of trust in us, and we didn't want to let them down in any way. So, you know, for us, we just kept pushing and trying to find a way to make it look a little bit better and a little bit cooler. And,
right.
You know, I think the hardest part was making sure it didn't look too different. Right. Like that's
no, there's a language you established, right?
Yeah. And just visually too, you know, like season 8 is a lot darker. Our main title is a little moodier. The lighting is different. But even with that, you know, one of the things that we kept going back to was how do we make sure that it isn't so different that it doesn't look related, you know? So we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that it felt familial and, you know, it felt kind of an extension of what we've previously done as opposed to a whole brand new thing. Yeah.
So what were those things that you made sure would tie across from season 1 to season 8?
Well, you know, Shahana Khan comped it for us, and you know, she's amazing in that, you know, I explained to her what I was thinking as far as, you know, this is a concern. Like I don't want it to feel completely different. You know,
right.
And it's something that we kind of went back and forth with over and over and over. Just, you know, how can we tie it back? How can we tie it back? And, you know, she found this balance between, I think the color palette of season 8 and the color palette of season 1 through 7, she found this nice mix, to bring the colors back to something that felt a little bit more like the original seasons.
Right.
And I think that helped a ton. And then, you know, making sure that the way we structured our buildings and how we built them and, you know, the mechanisms that we kind of used still follow the same rules. And I think from a broader perspective, that kind of, you know, gave us a good structure to kind of build off of to make sure that it all felt tied together. But I think the biggest thing was keeping the color. I don't know. It's hard to explain. Like she spent a lot of time trying to adjust the color to make sure that it didn't feel too modern. And that was something that, you know, was a concern, is that if we went too modern, it wouldn't feel like the charming season 1 through 7 kind of miniature representation of this map. It would
that's hard to quantify.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, we talked about it so much, and you know, it just became something that we always kept in the back of our heads, and and she did a really amazing job of figuring out how to bring some of that charm back without changing it structurally, you know. You know, I think our initial first couple passes of season 8 were a little too cool. So it took on a little bit more of a modern vibe. And, you know, she caught that and started grading things back and kind of warming things up a little bit in certain areas and grounding things a little bit more and making the colors feel a little more natural and things like that. And I think those changes really helped kind of tie the seasons together.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think there are certain things that no matter how much CG technology you can put behind it, it always requires an eye to get it back to the point where it all feels cohesive in some way.
I mean, I've always thought of CG, you know, whether it's whether you're lighting or animating or anything like that. I've always looked at it like it's just a really expensive pencil, you know, and
sure,
you can do anything with it. But, you know, for somebody who's been kind of doing it for a while and they understand the process, I think that pencil becomes way more effective.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things where if you put in the time and you have kind of the right mentality towards it, and you want to push it in a certain direction, it,
sure,
you know, you can get there. It's just a matter of figuring out what needs to happen, you know, and, you know, especially with comp and V-Ray and, you know, the finishing side of things. You know, I think it's just a matter of pushing the pencil around the right way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, down to like how much blue is in there, right?
Yeah.
That's interestingly, that's a simple problem. Like that's just a little bit of like a little bit this and there, but it's so important, right? That 1% can be such a big difference, and has nothing to do with the technology.
No.
It has nothing to do with the render
aesthetic.
You use.
Yeah.
It has to do with like someone you trust to be able to go, I think this is what you want, right?
Well, and it's one of those things, right? We're all trying to get out what's in it. We're all trying to get all those images out of our head and get them out onto the screen or, you know, in a movie or whatever, you know, however you're working on this stuff. And that translation between your brain and what you actually see is the hardest part, right? So, you know, finding people that can help you get there and understand, you know, have a shorthand with you. Like, I've worked with Shahana for a long time.
Sure.
And, you know, we have a really good working relationship and, you know, I trust her implicitly. So in this specific case, you know, it was one of those things where we knew what we were trying to avoid. So it was just a matter of figuring out how to kind of massage everything just enough, you know? And for me, that was part of the fun of it too, right? Like,
was she in season one too?
No, she wasn't. No.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, I think the first time I worked with her had to have been 10 years ago.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
I always feel that women have a better sensibility about how to tweak color than men do.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean that actually mainly based on a physiological way, right?
Yeah.
Like if I in a lot of the big visual effects facilities I've worked in, compositors. There are more women compositors than there are lighters, modelers, or anything else, right?
Yeah.
And I think the reason that is that women are actually really good at seeing color, which is actually physiologically well known, and they can sense difference in color much better than men can, and that is great for compositing, right?
Yeah.
And I was looking into it. I was trying to figure out, I was like, why is that, you know, evolutionarily speaking, right?
Uh-huh.
Why is that true? And that's because, according to a lot of research, women can actually detect different colors in plants as hunters and gatherers situations are going.
Gotcha.
And they can tell differences between something that's good and bad, right? And so there's actually good reason for women to be able to see. Women can see color better and they can smell better. We all know that women can smell better than men, right? Because men smell and women don't, right?
Yeah, men are nose deaf, yes.
Yeah. And so women are much better at identifying, you know, smell and color to identify what's good and bad, right? And so compositing is much better for women than men. That's just basically my thing. So it's really interesting that you say that about her being able to find a mood in color, right? Because she was basically saying like, you want this mood, and she can identify it and do it. And I bet you that it would be much harder for men to be able to do that.
Could be. Yeah.
I'm just saying that
for, you know, from my experience, she's, you know,
I don't know anything about her as a compositor. She sounds awesome, and I'd love to have her on the podcast. But
she's pretty amazing, and she's always found a way to kind of give things their own unique look.
Right.
So, you know, I guess that leans into your theory as to, you know, finding that balance between colors and that sort of thing, and finding the subtlety in how the image is put together.
Sure.
Know? Yeah. But yeah, it was, you know. For us, we wanted to make sure that season 8, we didn't leave anything, you know, we put everything out there and we didn't leave anything out that, you know, we this was our last shot to kind of do something different and new and that sort of thing.
So. It is, but it's also a new beginning, right? To me, I mean, honestly, you guys have gone through this journey. You have created an iconic thing, right? Mm-hmm. This is along the lines, honestly speaking, I think of the Game of Thrones title sequence as something as iconic as the Matrix bullet sequence or Minority Report or any of those other things, right? These are things that people are going to reference for years to come. Mm. And you guys did it, which is amazing. And I'm extraordinarily proud of the fact that, you know, I'm did whatever I can, which is not much, to help you guys get there, but it's important. And I think that thinking about, you know, where this is, and now that we are on the final sequence or final season, and that you guys just said, let's just put whatever we can into this, and that's gutsy, right? Because you got to the last season, it's like, we're going to do it again from scratch.
Yeah.
And when you told me you were going to do this, I was like,
yeah, that's the same noise I made too. When I realized that we're going to do this, this is actually going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing that we were kind of fighting with, and it kind of goes back to the idea of making the new season feel like the original 1 through 7 seasons, is that there's a certain expectation.
Right.
And there wasn't that expectation in season 1 because nobody had seen the show. It was brand new.
Right.
So, you know, not only are we trying to redo the entire main title to something that everybody's seen for 7 seasons already, that they like already, you know, the show is humongous too. So the fan base is rabid and they're diehard and they're really invested in this show. So
I know,
you know,
I know, because I have today, because I haven't watched the last episode, I have been avoiding all social media because that's all that's happening on social media right now.
I know. It's every Monday.
Every Monday is the worst.
Yeah.
Yep.
You have to watch it. It was pretty
I know.
Spectacular.
Yeah. I know.
I'm trying to avoid not saying anything, but it's really hard. But, you know, it was not only rebooting everything and redoing everything from scratch, but it was also, you know, how do we make sure we top what we already did?
Right.
And, you know, give something back to the community that watches this show, you know, give them something to get excited about and actually enjoy. You know, we didn't want to just kind of rehash what we've done. We wanted to make sure that we were going beyond what we had done. And it's like, how do you top it? You know, and I think that was something that we always had in the back of our head, to apply that extra pressure on ourselves to keep pushing and keep making sure that we're doing all the ideas that we feel like are important to get in there and you know, not leave anything out.
Now, do you feel that you know, doing the stuff that you guys did has put you guys in a spot where people are looking to you guys to come up with creative ideas for a lot of things like title sequences or just, you know, creative things that get the audience engaged in some way?
I think so. I mean, I you know, we've over the last, I don't know how long, it's been maybe 5 years or so, like the number of main titles that we've done as a company has gone up dramatically. So
did it start with Game of Thrones?
No, I think the first main title that we had any sort of kind of recognition for was the Carnival main title.
That was
Angus and Pat Murphy as well. That was years ago, like a long time ago. But you know, that was kind of our first, I believe that was the first.
What was the other one? True Detective. What?
Yeah, there was the more recent ones were Westworld.
Westworld.
Yeah, True Detective.
Right.
Altered Carbon.
Yeah. Daredevil.
Daredevil. Yeah. You know, there's been a bunch that we've kind of gone through.
And it, all of those are iconic, right? All of those have, like, I've seen, you know, like True Detective is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful title sequence. And the Key and Peele parody of that.
I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No, no.
Okay.
I'll check it out.
I'm actually going to show this to you afterwards because Key and Peele did an entire season of the Key and Peele show. There was a parody of the True Detective.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's brilliant. But because it's only because people looked at the True Detective title sequence and and went like, oh my God, this is like people would like reference like the song of that title sequence must have gone way up because the visuals are so powerful. Right. And it's, I don't know, it's really good.
I think that the one thing that's kind of cool that, you know, I think over time we've had the ability to test out different perspectives. So visually, you know, all these main titles that we've talked about, they're all visually fairly different.
Very.
So, you know, for us as a company, it's kind of nice because you can kind of stretch your legs in all sorts of directions. And, you know, I think the talent that we have and that we've brought in over time kind of has just grown that ability to, you know, try different things and push our boundaries in different directions. You know, and I think it's been a testament to the artists that we have to be able to do these things that are so visually different,
right?
But still kind of, I don't know, push the boundaries of whatever the title needed to be.
Right.
You know, kind of go beyond what just status quo would be and kind of push it a little bit further.
Right.
So that people do remember it and it does become a little bit more than just another, you know, two or three skips ahead in your DVR, you know.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I think when the title sequence becomes part of the episode that you're watching, that you're excited to see.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys have succeeded in the fact that people get excited to see that title sequence. That's part of the experience that they want to see, right?
Yeah,
And that's wonderful. And I think, you know, obviously Game of Thrones is a big one. But honestly speaking, all of the ones you've done, you know, talked about Westworld and True Detectives and all that stuff, Carnival, those are all experiences that people want to experience as part of the journey into the episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great experience, so... I think it's wonderful, and
I'm really
proud of the fact that I have, you know, for the last, you know, 5 years for me, been experiencing that and talking to you about it and helping you guys do whatever you need to do to get what you need to get done, and including a lot of weird experiments that we've done for a lot of times. And that, and honestly speaking, that's been fun, right? Like just like figuring out, like, you know, I love, you know, this is all only on a personal level, but, you know, I got my phone and I got a text from you and it's like, I got a weird idea.
Yeah.
What if we can do this? And like, let's try it. And we try these things and we've done a bunch of weird experiments together. And it's not just for Game of Thrones, but it's been for a bunch of random stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you and I have worked on some light field stuff that was weird. And like, we've done a bunch of strange experiments in different ways. And it's been great. And I think that people need to realize that a company like ours that seems like a big company, like if you've got a strange idea, reach out to us.
Yeah, we can never know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for me, the fact that I can text you about stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll hit me back and be like, all right, let's see. Let's set up a call and see what we can do.
Right.
You know, to me, that's pretty huge, you know. You know, even from you to Lon to Vlado, like writing back at all hours of the night, you know.
Right.
having that partner in production is kind of priceless, you know? And we always feel like if we're stuck, there's always going to be somebody there to help us out.
Right. You know?
And again, we're not huge. Like, we're not a ginormous company. We don't have, you know, 800 artists and a bazillion render nodes and all this stuff.
No.
But
actually, that's the case for a lot of our artists, right?
Yeah.
So to us, the fact that if we succeed for you guys, it means it succeeds for everyone, right? Mm. So that means a lot to us. And I'm not necessarily saying that you guys are small, but you guys are smaller than, like, you know, a big place. But you guys have very big creative ideas.
Yeah.
And if we can make that work,
yeah,
then that means that we can make it work for a lot of people. So that's a big, reason. That's a big motivation for us, right?
Yeah, that's kind of exactly where my head was going, is that, you know, I think creatively we tend to push things a little harder and a little weird, kind of strange directions. And the technology is a way for us to accomplish something creatively.
Right.
And, you know, knowing that we have the ability to hit you guys up, or if I give you a text and say, hey, we're kind of stuck on this thing, we're trying to do this weird kind of thing with this, and you know, and we know that you guys are there to kind of give us a hand with it. And even though our implementation of it is a little kind of offbeat and not necessarily your straightforward kind of implementation of something, you know, we're doing it because we want to create a certain creative image. Like, we're worried about the imagery and what the creative is going to show. So, you know, the technology is there to support that, and you guys are definitely there to support us in getting there.
It's also a two-way street. I just want to put that out there and make sure people understand it. It's not, we're not doing that just because we like you. We do. but the fact is that if you come up with a really unique idea,
yeah,
then we are going to look at that and go, that's a really unique idea.
Yeah.
And if we support that idea, it's going to serve the greater good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And you guys are not afraid to say something that feels like, I don't care, we just need to get it done.
Mm.
And then if everyone else benefits from it, then good for everyone else, right?
Mm.
Because sometimes that doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to support the greater good, right? Mm. And you guys are got great ideas. Not to say that we're going to, you know, steal your ideas and give it to everyone else.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
We don't do that. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, it's a two-way street. Like, whatever you guys – and honestly speaking, I can say this up front. Like, a lot of the there's a lot of things that happen in V-Ray over the last 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
That have come from what has happened in this title sequence.
Oh, wow.
I don't think you know that.
No.
But there's a lot of things that, like, what you guys had a problem with, we put in V-Ray, right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there's a lot of technology that's going on that people are using in V-Ray that are because of Game of Thrones.
That's cool. I mean,
if you think about it.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
it's pretty awesome. It just shows that, you know, that this kind of partnership it always produces something that's, like you said, for the greater good. You know, like, everybody benefits from it. So,
So there's some, you know, ArcVis person out of, you know, Croatia that is using V-Ray and is using technology that came out of Game of Thrones. I just want them to know that.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've actually gone way over. I don't know if you know that.
No, it goes fast.
Yeah, it goes fast.
Yeah.
But this has been awesome, Kirk. So thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me on again. It's always fun. I like the new digs.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad. And I know you've been, you know, down to the grindstone working on stuff. You went on a little vacation. You got a little sick, but we were able to get this podcast in. So
I appreciate you rescheduling for me.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. We're going to actually turn this one on real fast. So this actually is being recorded just as episode 3 came out yesterday, which I haven't seen. So by the time this comes out, if it goes on schedule, episode 4 will come out. So
great.
Hopefully I will see it by then.
I will say, without spoiling anything, pay attention to the title.
The title is important. It's part of the narrative, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's little things in this one that I don't think anybody
in title in season 3 or season 4.
In episode 3 there's one thing in particular that I haven't seen people pick up on yet, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We'll put it in the comments.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks a lot.